Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Mr. Jack Piatelli. Jack, how are we doing?
Well, I'll tell you, it's very cold the last couple of weeks. Getting to not like winter less and less as I get older, but I was able to do a little pond skating, which kept me warm and really enjoy that. What I don't like is Division I lacrosse has become a winter sport. And we're going to February 5th, February 12th, February 19th. The games are right around the corner. I think it's absolutely insane.
Do you know what my rule is for attending games that I tell every SID and every coach?
No.
You don't have a heater in that media room, I ain't coming. So just so you know, you want me to come to see your games. If you don't have a heater or some sort of implement, I don't care if it's fire, just something where I'm not covering a game in 6 degrees would be great.
You watch that Green Bay football game, 5 degrees snowing up, but they have the heated benches.
Yeah.
They have the heaters blowing. College lacrosse doesn't have that.
No. But what college lacrosse does have is the NESCAC. And we're going to talk to one of the best coaches in it, Wesleyan head coach John Raba. I know you know him well. What do you think this is gonna go like?
Oh, it's going to go great. He's just a great human being. And if I had a son, I'd want my son to play for him. And not only an excellent coach, won the national championship in 2018. He went to New Haven, played lacrosse, was an All-American, coached football at Brown, and become one of the best coaches in the country. He's got two sons playing, one for him and one at St. John's.
Yeah, he's it's funny. He still kind of looks like a football coach. Like he's like got that kind of like growl and that presence, right? And I think that really helps him with lacrosse and to coach it. And listen, I can't wait to nerd out about the Wesleyan zone and all of that. I was fortunate enough to follow that team through that whole 2018 run. And, you know, it's going to be like talking to an old friend. So I'm looking forward to it.
Same here. He's a high compete guy. We like high compete guys.
We love high compete here at the Chasing the Goal podcast. Without any further ado, Wesleyan head coach John Raba. All right, welcome in to the studio via Zoom, Wesleyan head coach John Raba. Coach, how we doing?
I'm doing great, Kyle. I appreciate you guys having me on today, and looking forward to the conversation. I've been listening; it's been keeping me busy listening to your podcast. It's been amazing the last couple months of some of the speakers you guys have had on, and so I was thrilled to get the call last week and jump on with you guys. So I'm really fired up about that.
Yeah, I think I've been pushing to have you on for since we started. So
appreciate
that's you know, Coach and I don't go as far back as you go, Jack. But one of the best articles I ever wrote was on the backer zone for Wesleyan, and it just so happened to be the year that you guys went on to win the national championship in 2018. Such a great experience getting to cover the games too, to cover the championship, see you guys in the tunnel, see you celebrate. It's just, it was, as a media person, you don't always get to follow a team's journey from February all the way through to the end of May. And with you guys, I did. It was incredible.
Yeah, that was an amazing journey. And yeah, it was great to, again, I mean, so we do need you to come back at some point, do a different follow-up story.
So, you got it.
Yeah, that was an amazing journey, as you know, and we had the right pieces at the right time. And again, you're the one, I will give you this. You were the guy out there out in front saying, hey, Wesleyan is the team in 2018. We had a good team in 17. But you knew that 18 team was really special, and we did some great things, and we kind of backed you up, you know. And again, we can't always do that, you know. And but that particular year we did, and it was just great to get to know you, and appreciate the piece, and again, getting to know Jack here too, with his just in a lot of different ways. Again, we have a deep appreciation for guys who you know, want to cover New England lacrosse, cover Division III lacrosse. It's just, you know, there's not a lot of you guys out there. So this is great. And hopefully we can be informative to some of the other people listening, if it's coaches or parents or recruits, whatever we can do to help the process. This is a great way to do that and streamline that and get into it. So I'm happy to be here. And again, that was a great memory. And then hopefully we can do that again, Kyle, one day.
Yeah.
Coach, what I was more impressed with, obviously winning national championship, high academic school, NESCAC league, if not the best conferences, Division I, II, or III in the nation, so much talent, a lot of competition with recruiting, so on and so forth. But after you won that national championship in 2018, you lost, I believe, 15 seniors from that team, and you were still able to win the conference championship. I think it was a three-way tie that year in 19. Another winning season. You've been at Wesleyan for 26 years. You've only had one losing season. How were you able to, lose that many players in a season, you know, coming off a national championship, regroup, and again be a NESCAC co-champion?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the biggest thing for us, I think it's, you know, we certainly have a mentality of player development, you know, and, you know, taking our younger players and really when we talk to recruits when they first come in is letting them know, like, hey, this isn't, you know, your expectations, you have to manage those early on in your career, right? So we're going to, you know, we don't really talk about freshmen coming in here and starting, regardless of how good they are. They could be, you know, multiple time All-Americans in high school. They could be just, a transfer student. There's no promises in that way. You know, it really, the only thing we tell, let them know is like, hey, if they come in and work hard and stay with the program and trust our process, that, you know, the opportunity will be there, you know, and that's something that a lot of our players and our upperclassmen have really bought into. It makes it a lot easier when you do have those big groups. 2018, we actually graduated 18 seniors that year. So there's a lot of seniors, a lot of great leadership. Any great team, though, I will tell you, is stacked with different talent in different classes, right? So it's never going to be one particular group. It's usually going to be like, hey, you've got, you know, a great junior class. You've got some great help in your sophomore class, maybe one or two freshmen that are able to kind of make an impact. And that's what happened in that particular group. So there was definitely some talent left in the cupboard in 19 and even 20. That was still a very good team with a lot of All-Americans on that team. And 20 was obviously shortened. So, you know, again, this is the new challenge for us, you know, at Wesleyan with COVID times and, you know, not having that kind of player development piece available for 2 full years. And we can jump into the zone and what that means for that. Kyle knows that that's a process in itself. But, you know, the big piece is going to be us kind of hitting the reset. And I think as a staff, we've been here for 26 years. My assistant coach, Will Parker, has been with me for 21 years. Rick McCarthy has been with me for 18 years. You know, there's a lot of longevity and veteran coaches on our staff. We're getting to do something we haven't done in a while and hit the reset button, right? So hit them with new kids that, you know, are going to kind of hear a lot of our messages for the first time. So, you know, and then with great, strong senior leadership, hopefully we can kind of, you know, have this new set of whatever, you know, if it's hopefully 10, 15 more years of me doing this, you know, we can kind of make our mark in player development and buying into the Wesleyan way. You know, that's if we can do that. We felt like there's been a lot of a lot of stories we could tell our current team about what guys have done in the past. Right. So this is going to be a very interesting time of how players dealt with COVID and how we, you know, how they kind of persevered through those times and now how we're able to get back on top and do those things. So it is a challenge, but we're really excited for that challenge and ready to go for that.
Well, we'll get to the zone question eventually. I'm told I'm on a limit of 2 or 3 of those. Because as you know, we could sit and talk about that forever. It's one of my favorite things. I very seldom get to talk about it, coach it, or have any connection to it. But we'll get to it. But first, let's kind of touch on that, you know, COVID component. You know, last year, I think about a third of the team elected not to come back to campus, and you guys still put out a team while three other NESCAC teams chose not to play. And I know you had players from the football team, the hockey team, and some of those guys were recruits anyway, but they were filling spots and you guys really came together. How much of this year's team, their morale was kind of built with last year's journey?
Well, not many, because, you know, last year, the truth is, you know, we only had 15 players return last spring, right? Everyone else basically was, you know, campus, or we had a bunch of guys down in South Carolina, you know, doing, you know, playing, and which is good. And they had a kind of a normal college experience. But, you know, with 15 players, that wasn't going to do it for us. So like you said, you know, we had to go out. Like, I felt like it was year one at Wesleyan. You know, we had to grab some guys who've played hockey maybe 3-4 years ago, some junior hockey guys. You know, I was driving around campus, certainly with the sticks in my trunk, and handing them equipment like on the street and saying, hey, we'll meet you at practice tomorrow. And there was a lot of creative ways to try to make our practice happen. But we did have a good, strong senior class, you know, with a couple of really strong players, you know, so that definitely helped us compete at a really high level. You know, we didn't have all the tools, you know, that we normally do. But we had enough good players to really make things competitive and interesting. We had some two great wins against Trinity. You know, they had 60 guys on the roster. Again, we had basically 15 guys returning and six other guys who were part-time players. And, you know, so that was a good win. And Hamilton was a good win. We took Williams right to the fourth quarter. It was tied in the fourth quarter, you know, with about 7 minutes to go. So again, we were down to the wire with them. They were in a similar situation to us. And then Tufts, we couldn't match up. They had just so many guys back. And, but for the most part, we did a good job of, you know, our tradition of, hey, having another winning season, competing at a high level. And again, in that regard, I think it's what we do and what we try to accomplish each and every year. But the reality is there isn't a ton of guys back from that team last year. We have Jake Sexton, we have Cal Camphaus, and two kind of really well-knowns. Those are the guys that are two senior captains for us who've been part of it. But everyone else is going to be either returners from 2 years ago, or they came last fall, they weren't here last spring. And then we have this whole influx of, you know, 17 new freshmen, you know, so there's a lot of new faces here. So it's going to be exciting, you know, like I said, really grateful that we had the fall opportunity to work with these guys and really get our, you know, some of our practices in place, just so we know, you know, what our lingo and the way expectations and the standard of how we want to do things. That's all in place, which is great. So that should give us a really nice little boost here going into, you know, a longer preseason. You know, again, some of the rules with the NESCAC are now that we can start February 1st, basically, or now it's really February 2nd for us, but we have a much longer, you know, period of, you know, preparation that we normally wouldn't have, right? So that's another positive, I would say, that came out besides the fall practices. We've had a lot more opportunities to work with our team hands-on. So we're excited about that, and I think that's going to be a real, you know, a real benefit to us as we move forward.
Coach, you talk about having 17 freshmen come in this year. That's got to be more than what you normally bring in from year to year. And obviously, you also said that not a lot of freshmen will play at Wesleyan as freshmen, but you may not have a choice but to play some of these guys this year.
Yeah, there's certainly a couple that we think they can definitely break through. You know, we're still, fortunately, we feel like our upperclassmen are still, you know, the guys who are just physically more developed. They've been around the program a little bit more. They're just older. They have the right of refusal, I'll say, right? They get the right opportunity to earn that spot. It doesn't mean a freshman can't go take it, right? So that's going to play itself out in the first couple of weeks of our preseason. But, you know, we certainly have identified a few freshmen on our team that, hey, they're getting ready to – we can insert them pretty early, you know, into – and if they break through as a starter, that's great. That means they've done some great things when we do put them into game situations. But talent-wise, yes, there's definitely a couple of guys there that we anticipate, like, we'll have an impact on our season and see if they break through as a freshman. I mean, we've had some great ones through, you know, and who have not started, who by the middle of their freshman year started. We had a kid, Carter Horthon, a few years ago, who's all-time leading assist leader here. But again, he didn't start until game seven of his freshman year, you know. And again, I think it's good for them to learn to earn it. You know, to me, it's like I never give anybody anything. You know, they have to earn it and they have to go through the process of it and show us in practice and competitive situations that they really deserve to be on the field. So, again, I'm very upfront with that, with our recruits as they come in. And I think what happens is it gives our upperclassmen a real appreciation of like, hey, if they put the work in, their time in, they're going to get that opportunity, you know, to show us what they got. And we're not going to just bypass them with a hotshot freshman that can come in and just, you know, because we thought he was great in high school, like earn it first. So that's our mentality. It's always been that way. And, you know, but we're excited, and it is a big group of freshmen that we have to manage. And but they've done a great job so far in the fall, and I'm excited for them as well.
I think that's a great message to the incoming freshmen and to your players, sophomores, juniors, and seniors who have earned the time on the playing field, because there are a lot of, you know, freshmen that come in and just might assume that, you know, they're going to play, but you've got to earn it. You got to put your time in the weight room, to continue to develop your skills. You've got to be a good teammate. There are a lot of parts to the process to get on the field, more so now than when you played at New Haven and I played at Springfield. And it's a good lesson for these players to earn the right to be on the field, because it's a great life lesson as well.
Absolutely. No, it's the only way. It's really, it is a major life lesson. When you go to these schools, and we're all fortunate, you know, as coaches to coach here, and players have to have an appreciation, understand, like, you know, it's a privilege to play at these places and play college across and be part of a team. And again, there's lessons you're going to learn that are well outside of just the winning and losing. They're going to help you later on in life. And that's one of them. Like, you know, that's one of them. And so you're dealing with disappointment. Some of these guys haven't dealt with, they might've been 4-year starters in high school, and they might've been the man. And you go back to the bottom of the totem pole when you get here. You know, we treat you very well. Don't get me wrong. I think our staff is very, we're good to our players, and we're positive, and, you know, we really kind of promote that type of atmosphere on campus. But, you know, the reality is, like, you still got to earn it. You still got to show us what you got on a day to day, and you got to do it early on. You got to do it consistently, because that's where, for freshmen, they can show us flashes of greatness. There's no doubt. But can they do it for day 3, day 5, 2 weeks later? You know, are they doing it all the time? And that's when, once they start doing that, then we know they're ready. Right. So, again, we have much with this fall for us. That's one of the beauties of our fall now, and working with our student athletes. We feel like we're able to evaluate and give them a really fair shot, you know, early on in terms of where we're moving guys, adjusting in terms of our depth chart. Right. So the old way, when we would come in February 15th, you know, we've got 2 weeks before our first game. Technically, we haven't worked with our kids all fall. You know, we're talking to our captains about things. We're kind of guessing like how kids may pan out. So it may take like a quarter, you know, a few games and opportunities to really get his feet wet. And once he gets in there, it was great. I think now, with the amount of, we have 5 weeks of practice before our first game against Bates in March. You know, we had, you know, 15 practices in the fall. We've practiced so much more now than we've practiced ever in the past, that we just have such a better feeling about the group, and we can, you know, again, communicate better. We can, you know, not only connect, but we can really kind of, you know, start to break things down in a much better way. So that part's been awesome. And, but again, it goes back to, you know, your work ethic, your effort, your competitiveness. Like we've seen all those things now. We've got a really good taste of that. And we feel like we can kind of continue to move forward now, early in the season.
Coach, we've had, you know, a lot of challenges during this time, but a lot of good things have come out of it. Like you just said, you were able to practice for 5 weeks before your first game. Previous years, 2 weeks. You had a fall season this year. NESCAC has never had a fall season. Going forward, do you think that this will continue? You'll be able to play in the fall and have the 5 weeks before your first game?
That's a great question. You know, I think we're all very hopeful of that. That's in the talks right now. I mean, the first good sign is that our fall sports that participated in football and, you know, everybody else, volleyball, they just got granted a spring practice waiver as well. So that's a good sign for the future. I'm hoping that, like, that's going to, our presidents obviously feel like there are benefits there. The challenge we have at this level, to be honest with you, it's I think everyone's on board and it's doable, but it's just the resources, you know, how much support staff you have that can handle that. How many fields do you have that can handle every single sport, you know, participating at the same time? That's the reality. And these schools, it's not like Division I schools. All these NESCAC schools have 30 plus sports. Some of them have 35 plus sports, you know? So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people making requests to try to get field time. And then you talk about the trainers, like the athletic trainers, like, you know, if you've only got three or four of those people, it's like hard for them to cover, you know, everything. So there's other factors in place here besides just, you know, the want for it. I think if you ask our student athletes, they felt it was a really positive and great experience. We made it fun. Our coaches certainly would love to have it. And I think some of the presidents are behind it. It's just, can we work out those other details about, like, you know, how much are we going to facility kind of crush, and also, like, can we handle it with the athletic trainers? But I think we're heading in a good direction. So I'm optimistic about it, but there's been no final word, and that probably won't come until really the season's over for us.
So the preseason talk in lacrosse is, you know, D1 starts first. So everyone's talking about the unpredictable nature of that. And all anyone can talk about is no one knows what's going on with the Ivy teams. I would say that's a perfect mirror for the NESCAC teams, because we have three teams that didn't play in Middlebury, Amherst, and Bowdoin. Two new coaches in that mix as well.
Right.
And you have all of these schools either graduating a lot of seniors or bringing in a ton of freshmen, as you have. How important is scouting going to be going into 2022 for you guys?
Oh, yeah. It's going to definitely be one of those things. I'm just so not familiar with a lot. Like, I haven't seen Colby in years. I haven't seen Bates in a couple of years. Like, I haven't seen some of these teams in a long time, you know? So it's going to be huge. We've looked at some of the films that are online. I mean, the nice thing is we have Huddle now, so we all have access to pretty much every film. But every year is new too. You know, like I said, I don't want to get caught up too much in, like, looking at all the old stuff. Like, you know, there's new assistant coaches, there's new systems in place. Like I said, you have new head coaches, their philosophies may be different. So once we get into game week, it's going to be important that, you know, that we're all kind of focused on, all right, what are we seeing? And I think the one thing that we've been fortunate here at Wesleyan is we do have a big staff. You know, I believe in that. I think, you know, when you're dealing with 50 players, I believe that you need to have a bigger staff, because I want a lot of communication with our guys. You know, there's nothing more frustrating for players, in my mind, that is they don't know if they're doing things right, wrong. They're not really getting communicated to. And we can't work with them maybe as individually as much as you would want to, because you just don't have the support. So where it helps us in the second part of that, when we're talking here, is really it's the film breakdown stuff as well. Like, so now I think with some of our younger coaches and some of our veteran coaches, you know, we could say, all right, hey, look, we've got, you know, we get to week, you know, two or three, and we've got Bowdoin on the schedule. You know, we should be able to see every one of their films and kind of, you know, and have some report that we can give or detail into the scout. So that's huge for us in terms of, like, the huddle piece and being able to see all those films, because we're going to count on that more so than knowing, hey, I remember this from last year, and understanding what they're going to try to do, you know. So that piece is huge. We're going to rely on the scouting and do our due diligence to make sure we're prepared in that way. And but, you know, at the end of the day, I think every school is super prepared for each other. It's like, do you have the players to do it? You know, so that's the next piece.
I know one of those players that is new to your team that you're very familiar with is your son, Jack Reba, who transferred in from Loyola to play for you this year. How was that process kind of kickstarted? Was it COVID related? And how do you expect him to fit into what you're trying to do on offense?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll tell you, the first thing I'll say is he loved his experience at Loyola. He's got some of his best friends in the world are still down there. We love Coach Toomey. He's been nothing but, you know, an amazing coach. And Jack probably, if you're honest with you, if there wasn't COVID going on, he'd probably still be down there. But with COVID, losing a season, getting an extra year of eligibility, and then, you know, the thought of, like, a lot of guys, you know, the one thing I'll say that's different, I would say, between like the Patriot League schools, or at least Loyola, is they do have a graduate school, and pretty much all those kids are coming back, right? All of them decided right away, like, hey, I'm going to come back. I'm going to take my extra year. You know, so again, if you're a guy kind of working your way up the depth chart and trying to get your, waiting for your opportunity, now you're like waiting another year, you know, and you're like, well, I'm not sure if I'm going to, you know, ever get on the field, you know, so that kind of made him reevaluate his whole situation. And he was pretty close with a lot of guys on our team at Wesleyan as well. Like, he was very close with Roman Jacoby. We're hoping we could have got those two on the field again. They grew up playing lacrosse together and club stuff. And he knows a lot of guys, like I said, just in our program. So, you know, when he started kind of saying, hey, Dad, I'm thinking about this, you know, I just wanted to make sure he was, like, understanding of, like, you know, there are challenges with that as well. I think it was really good that he went away and is coming back. And I think it's great that he's been with our team for two falls, basically, and was able to establish himself as a really good player. So I think that's been good. We're excited. He's done a really great job for us, and excited he's going to add a different look for us, I think, on the field. But again, we treat him like everyone else. As a father-son relationship, it's a little trickier. I try to have my assistant coaches deal with him a little bit more on the individual stuff, because I have a tendency to get a little bit more. If I get mad, I usually take it out on him, and that's always been the case. And he's really understanding and been good with that. I shouldn't do that, but I usually do. I've been much better. And again, that one maybe was a high school thing or a middle school thing. And so it's been working out really well for the last two falls for us to have him here on campus, and excited to play a season with him.
Selfishly, I hope that he goes into lacrosse writing, as he interned at Inside Lacrosse with one of my good friends, Ty Zanders, doing recruiting work during the break. And he did it from all accounts, and everyone that I know down there said he did a great job, worked super hard, great kid. I met him a couple times. We talked about the zone a little bit. We talked about Wesleyan, and, kids all smiles, like very positive person. And I actually can't wait to see him play D3. I'm really excited to see like what he can do. I know at Cheshire, he put up 200 plus points, had over 100 assists. That's an exciting kind of player to bring into the NESCAC.
Yeah, no, we're excited. Like I said, he's got some different skill sets. He's a big kid. So we think he'll do a good job, and he understands, there's also a target on his back because of it. So like, he's got to deal with that, and that's fine. Like I said, I think he's been around enough, and he's used to getting working against guys like Cam Wires in practice every day, and some real beast at Loyola. So I don't think there'll be anybody he's intimidated of. I think he'll go at people, which is good. And he had a great experience on Inside Lacrosse. I know he talked to you, and Ty was awesome, and Terry was great to him. And he wants to get into coaching. That's the unique thing. Like, there's not a lot of guys that come to Wesleyan and say, "I want to become a coach." And he's always said that from his high school years. And I thought it was a great idea that he said, "I want to go down and to be at recruiting events." Is a great way to kind of learn about, the main part of being a coach is recruiting. So it was great that he got that experience, and Ty was able to give that to him, and was really fond of it. So, but we've shifted to the playing and looking forward to this for the next couple of years.
I really need him to start writing about lacrosse though. Can we talk? There's not enough, man. There's not enough. I'm actively, if you're listening to this podcast and you want to write about lacrosse, just email me or hit me on Twitter, because we need players that know what they're talking about, that have experience, and are coaches that want to write about the sport, because there's just so few of us. It's, with coaches, there's a lot of coaches that can do a lot of things, but as it's a busy schedule. So it's especially when the season's here, man. We're lucky to get you, is what I'm saying. I appreciate it.
They also have to know how to write. You forgot that part.
I'm an editor. It's fine. I'll fix it.
That's the problem right now for me. I can't really help you in that regard in the writing piece. But again, I love talking. So this is awesome.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity. And they give it everything they got, from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students can earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
Coach, you talk about the Wesleyan way. What is the Wesleyan way, and what do you look for in a player that fits your Wesleyan way?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pieces. I think that the biggest piece for us is to be selfless. You know, I think that's a really important, you know, be a team guy first, right? As I get older and I've been through it, like it's just the locker room and just the people I want to interact, they need to be good people, right? And they need to be good teammates. And I think our team, our program functions a lot better when there's not a lot of drama around it, and there's not a lot of distractions. You know, there's a great quote that Coach Miller from St. John's, my youngest son's going there, and I love his quote when he said to me, "Don't make my problems your problems, my problems." You know, he says that to his players a lot, and I thought, man, that's a good way to put it, because there's a lot of things that could happen, and there's a lot of decision makings that, you know, between 18 and 22 make that aren't the greatest. But we don't need, you know, we want guys who feel like can make those right decisions. And the other piece that too is really, really important is to be self-motivated, you know, just, you know, with the way our league works, you know, and at least the way it's worked in the past, the first 25 years of my career, we hadn't had a lot of those opportunities to work with guys in the off season. So if we can't do it, we need guys who want to do it on their own, like to be great. And there's certainly, we've proven we can do it that way as well. I think this way is a good model, but there is definitely some components that we miss to the old way. And one of those things is, you know, being a leader, right? So we are when we get here in the fall, usually we're going to turn it over to our senior class, and we're going to let them know, like, hey, we don't have a lot of coaching we can do with you guys. You guys have to run this. You know, you have to keep guys accountable. So the time this leadership kind of, you know, challenges. And also opportunities that come when you get up, you go up the ladder, your junior, senior year. But those are things that I think that we're looking for guys who want to embrace that. You know, when I say the Wesleyan way, guys who are looking forward to that. And I always tell student athletes when they leave my office, either you're really excited and you want to be part of it, or maybe it sounds like a little too much for me. And both ways, it's fine both ways. Like, and I just try to, you know, kind of map it out exactly how it'll be. But again, I think the guys who've come through and kind of, you know, do it the way we're hoping they do it, it's turned out really well. I mean, we've in the last, you know, 5 years, we've had 28 All-Americans in our program. You know, there's a lot of guys who I think out of that, those 28 All-Americans, I think only five of them were high school All-Americans. So that means we're developing guys into college All-Americans. So we take a lot of pride in that as well. You know, we may not get the top athletes in every year. We know that. And we know there's a lot of guys who might have been slighted and felt like, you know, this school in the conference didn't want me. Well, Wesleyan does. And this is what I'm going to show everybody, you know, and that happens all the time. So, you know, so if they have that chip on their shoulder too, that maybe we're not the first choice, you know, that's fine. We're going to run with it. And we're going to make sure at the end that we're going to be there. And we're going to be able to compete for, you know, a championship, you know, a conference championship at least. Every year, every couple of years.
Looking up and down your roster, you have kind of the I don't want to say usual suspects, but you know, you're in Connecticut, you're getting a lot of New England recruits, Massachusetts, Connecticut, obviously you're pulling from New Jersey, New York, but you also have kids from Utah, Florida, Illinois, California. It's wild. And you're pulling all of these players into a system where they know they have to grind to get on the field. How is that manufactured by the staff and the expectations built for players before they come on campus and then after?
Right. Yeah. First, I think with in regards to staffing and recruiting and everything else, and what keeps it exciting for us is I've got two tremendous assistant coaches right now. You know, Will Pilot and Cole Pecora. Those guys are our main recruiters on the road. You know, so we're obviously if you look at our demographic and you're seeing, you know, 14 different states and growing, you know, with next year's class as well. You know, we spend a lot of time. You know, on the West Coast and seeing other areas, Midwest, we're starting to hit Florida now, Texas, that's another area we want to start to break into. There's great players everywhere. But again, I think part of it is having young coaches that, again, to go see that talent, right? And, you know, again, I can't do it all as a coach. Like, you know, I don't mind doing the New England region. I'll hit Long Island, you know, Maine. I'll hit my areas. I'll try to get to some of the bigger events. But the reality is there's so many kids out there that I need them to do a lot of the legwork too, right? Find good players, see them live. And once I identify them, like, yep, I think that's the kid we definitely want to bring in. You know, that's my job is to close, right? So they find the talent, bring them in, you know, and then we'll do the rest in our end. And that's worked really well for us. But, you know, getting them to buy into the process, like I said, it's, I think the positive is, like, you know, when you have a successful program, it's been some consistency for over a long time. I think players are drawn to that as well, right? We have the academic ability. You'll have a real opportunity to do some great things after you graduate, get a great degree, but also, you know the opportunity to compete at the highest level. And that really happens when you have administrative support. Your president believes, you know, we have a great athletic director here, you know, alumni base, you know, so there's a lot of things that have to fall in place for you to be really good. And when one of those pieces don't, it's really hard to be good. Right. And it's really, you could be grinding as a coach, but it's going to be hard to get over that hump. We're fortunate where we have all those pieces. And I think we talk to our recruits about that, a willingness and wanting to go be at the best and compete at it. And we're not shy to say that. It's, you know, it doesn't mean it's going to happen every year. Pieces definitely have to fall in place, but, you know, we're not shy to go after it. So we'll kind of track the country to try to find the best and brightest, you know, for our class each year. And it's been expanding each year. And I'll tell you, those kids athletically, they come in, there's some really special athletes that are coming from different areas that, you know, I'm like, whoa, you know, we haven't seen these types of kids in a while. So it's really exciting for us to do that. And it's going to continue to be that way as lacrosse expands.
You bring up a good point, Coach. It's becoming more and more competitive, not only to play at the division level, but to be accepted at the NESCAC schools because there's more interest from players all across the country. Before it was very New England regionalized. Now you're getting a guy on your roster from Tennessee as well, Nashville, which is unbelievable. When it comes to recruiting, you know, every year you're going to have different needs, different position needs. For instance, let's say you have three attack needs next year because you've got three attackmen graduating. When you take a look at all the players across the country, is there a set number of attackmen you want to look at before you decide on those three players that you want to bring in? Could it be 100? Could it be 50? Or how do you work that out?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jack, because that's the one that makes it a little challenging because there's always a group of really good players that are anxious to kind of get going early in the process and they're excited and we like them as players, but in fairness to everyone else, we still have to see a lot of other players too. Right. And so there's that balancing act that definitely happens where you're definitely showing interest and you're definitely, you know, we're letting players know that you're certainly someone we're interested in and we want to track through the spring and hopefully see another look live, you know, early summer, maybe at a prospect day. Some schools in our league will definitely, July 1st will come, and there's an expectation you're going to commit to our school on July 1st, and they'll by 5 days later, their class is completely closed. That never happens at Wesleyan. That never happens. If we get halfway through our group in the middle of July, I'm very comfortable, and I'm very comfortable as we go into August having more opportunities to talk to more players. There's you know, really good Division I players that are kind of falling through the cracks, you know, as well that are happening in August and September that now open up, you know, and if we close our class, we don't give them that opportunity to do that. So We do make sure we have to manage our roster, you know, which is nice. But we're not capped either, you know, and I think that's the beauty of, you know, Division III, some schools where I think at Division I schools, there's a lot of, you know, Title IX issues that they have to deal with. Like, hey, you have got a hard cap of whatever it is, 45, 44. For us, you know, we could take a few more in a class. If we think someone could add to the, you know, equation and there's a late add on that is really good, you know, we can do that to a degree. But we also try to go in with a mindset of like, all right, this is what our number, our golden number would be for this particular class. It's never going to, very rarely is it 17 that we just talked about with our freshman class. It's more like in that 10 to 12 range. Like I said, getting a few in each position, seeing what the senior class looks like. So there's a lot of other pieces that kind of go into the equation itself. And again, if there's a really great special one out there that, you know, came onto us late, we didn't have that opportunity, all of a sudden he's there. Again, we try to find an opportunity for that student athlete as well. But again, there's some patience that has to happen with a lot of prospects because, again, you may be, you know, on the list and they may elevate as the summer goes, gets going. You know, there was a couple of kids on our list now that we were like, oh, we like them. We saw them early as juniors and even their spring season. But, man, they were elevating as the summer was going on, different events. And we, by the end, by July, we're like, God, we love these guys. If we took some other kids in early July, I don't know if those guys would even, you know, they would consider Weston because they'd be like, well, you already have three attacking coach, you know, so they would have probably X'd us off if they knew that. So there's that piece that we have to work with as well, but that's the reality of recruiting.
I'd love to see Division I, II, and III have the same deadlines for recruiting because there's a lot of confusion out there with parents and players. September 1 rolls around, and it's the first day that coaches can actually start talking to players.
Right.
Division III, you can sign agree to a recruit July 1st going into their senior year. I truly believe that so many kids, when that September 1st date rolls around, they think it's signing day, whether it's 1, 2, or 3.
Right.
Your blue chippers are going to get signed, right?
Right.
But there aren't that many of those. And when you think about this 23 class, which is the next class in line to go to college, right, that's getting recruited because 22s are all done, they still have 2 more years of high school to develop.
Right.
I mean, back in the day, 5 years ago, they were committing 8th graders, which was nuts. But do you think that all the divisions would come together and have the same guidelines? Because I think it would benefit all the schools and all the players. So the players know they have until they're going into their senior year. They can enjoy high school. There's so much pressure on these kids. I got to get recruited. And, you know, they're not playing well between the lines because the thing about the coaches that are watching them play and, you know, and I tell them, you got to be patient. You know, control what you can control, right? Keep working hard off the field, in the classroom, and you'll find a place. But I'd love to see all divisions come together, and I think every player should not be committed until they go into their senior year of the fall.
Right, yeah. I mean, I would say the one positive for us, Jack, that's really helped us, actually, the early recruiting certainly helped us in regards to it got a lot of those – a lot of kids committed and a lot of classes filled up. So it left this huge pool of kids who are ultra talented, but there was no other space for them to go at Division I. So that really trickled down to Division III. And I think that's really helped like our game, the top teams in Division III, top 20 teams, top 40 teams of all have a roster that's really impressive. And we've also have a lot of depth now. You know, we've got like our, you know, 40 to 50 on the roster are really good players, you know, that it can probably would have started for us, you know, 10 years ago, you know, so that's really helped in terms because there's a lot of those players that we're looking for a home now. I think the thing I'll say about the positive, I would say for Division III coaches is when the Division I stuff all happens, all right, there's a wave of kids that commit that again, we've seen the same kids and we like those kids, but we also know as Division III coaches, all right, we have to wait. We have to be patient, let them kind of go through that process. I would be concerned if we all said, hey, it's the same deadline, that there'd be more gray area and then we'd be taking some other kids and there'd be like another kind of middle ground where you know, they're waiting for Division I schools. We have to make some moves on some kids. And all of a sudden now you're missing out on some, the kids you really kind of want, you know, that are kind of somewhere falling in between of that Division I level, top tier Division III. So it there's some positives in terms of like, it's playing itself out through the course of the year, their junior year. And then there's still going to be some kids who commit, obviously, when, you know, they're still looking to fill classes. But I think, you know, if the, a core of the schools have 60 or 70% of their classes filled, it's not going to be that many kids, right? So really, we have a pretty clear picture. The time we get to June and July, even May, of like who's out there, which are the top kids now that are out there, which are the ones we could really dial in and focus in on. It makes our lives a little bit easier. But I understand what you're saying for the student athlete to give them that full picture. And the nice thing is we're taking kids that are definitely, we've got a much fuller look at them, right? We've got their full spring now that we've finally made this decision. We get to maybe see them early in, you know, June in a tournament or July. So there's some real benefits there that we feel really good. Every time we take a recruit, that like, hey, this kid's got a lot of these tools. We're not really worried about him developing in certain areas. He seems to be really developed in these areas. We kind of get a fuller picture, I believe, of that. And I think it's been a benefit for us, to be honest with you, this model. But to the student athletes, again, the further you could push it back in the process, where if it's even, I think it would be better for them, no doubt. But it could also grade some things up as well.
All right, it's time. We're going to talk about the zone. Backer zone. I'm very excited. For those of you that are listening that aren't kind of tactic nerds like me, the backer zone is something Wesleyan's kind of famous for. They've developed it. It's a zone defense that has kind of five spokes and a dedicated slider that changes in and out. Is that fair? I'm trying to dumb it down as much as I can. I don't know how you would describe it.
I would say it has six spokes, and okay. Then we just have a kind of rotating. You know, like I said, that there's an adjustable guy that will kind of go to each area. So we want to basically be able to cover every perimeter player, right? So if they ever put six guys on a perimeter, we can actually technically cover everyone. If they want to circle, most teams aren't going to go in a circle in zone. At least they won't stay in a circle. But the reality is it's a very adjustable, adaptable zone that we've been running. And really, I'm going to give all the credit to Jack Cayley, who's one of the best coaches I've ever been around from New York Tech. Who really, when we went there, when I first got the job at Wesleyan, he was the one guy that said, come on down, and we'd scrimmage them back in 96, 97, 98. And, you know, that was when they were warring with Springfield College at the time for national championships and for Division II. And we really couldn't do anything against the zone, to be honest with you, offensively. You know, part of it is we didn't have nearly the talent we have now, but also we technically just couldn't do much. You know, I felt like they had an answer for every single thing we did. And it was very different from the other zones I've seen where you actually could throw the ball on the perimeter and they weren't really pressuring you in certain areas. And, you know, here it was like, we're running to all kinds of pressure. They're covering things up. They seem to be on all their checks on skip passes that are on your hands or chopping down pressure on the right guys at the right points. So that's where we kind of came up with some of the things that are we walked away from there. And then from really 2000 on, we've been running this zone. With Coach Parker, myself, and again, something we believe in. I think it's you still have to have really good players. You know, I don't really believe in. I hear a lot of coaches talk a lot about, you know, hey, we do this because maybe athletically we can't match up. But I disagree with that 100%. I think we can play man, and we've done that many times. Sometimes if things aren't going that well, we want to hurry it up. You know, we can press people, and we've probably had more All-Americans on the defensive side than we had on the offensive side throughout my time. So, you know, if you just think you're going to get an All-American honor by sitting in a zone and just putting your stick up, you're wrong. You know, so here, this allows you to pressure people, run people into doubles, trap some people. It's unique. I'm not really going to get into too many of the details that we do and how some of the other stuff that kind of goes with it. But, you know, again, if you watch our film, you can see sometimes you can't tell. Are we in man or zone there? What are we in? When the ball goes behind, what are they? They look like they're in man, you know, and that's good because that means we're doing a good job of kind of disguising it and playing it the way we want to play it. So it's, I believe in it. I mean, hey, if they've outlawed it in basketball, there's got to be a reason, you know. It slows people down. Again, I think this day and age where everyone is so anxious to go fast and so anxious to make things happen in a hurry and go, go, go. to now force them to be patient. If you can get your six guys in, you can get set up. And then, hey, you've got to be patient. You've got to move the ball. You've got to be really work it and look for each other and to make it for a quality shot. That only goes in our favor because I think today kids are just want to go all the time. So the shot clock certainly helps us with the zone as well. We there's an end game to this. You know, sometimes we'd run into these teams where, hey, they're going to sit in the zone. Maybe we may not be as talented as Wesleyan, so we're just going to hold the ball for 3 minutes. That happened all the time. And, you know, all of a sudden, before you know it, you're like, oh, my God, it's, you know, 5-5 in the fourth quarter, you know. And so that there's those pieces there that I think are helping with the shot clock, that are helping our game. But with the zone. But again, it's something that you do have to work a good amount. Like, you can't anticipate, like, you're just going to put this in and work on it a little bit and then come back to it 2 weeks later. And then, hey, we in another 3 weeks, going to play someone. Remember, we ran that in practice. It doesn't work that well. I always try to tell every coach that comes through, and we get Division I coaches that come through all the time and ask and sit down and talk to us about it. And I'm like, you have to be dedicated to it. You have to really believe, like, it's something, part of the package that can work, and believe in it and work through the kinks and work through some of the setbacks. And everything's not perfect. You know, like, you certainly are going to have some mistakes and rotations, and guys aren't going to be on, you know, it just takes one guy, like everything else, who's off a little bit, that can slow it down. Or your goalie's having a tough day, you know, and he's not really seeing the ball well. Those elements too. So it's just something we believe in here, and we've always believed in it. And we give a lot of credit to the New York Tech guys for introducing us to it and us putting our own little tweaks to it.
Yeah, I love talking about it because zone gets such a bad rap. And yes, 3-3 passive zone is bad. Right. I don't think that's controversial to say. 3-3 right. Passive zone in lacrosse is not good. And that is not what you guys do. And, you know, like you said, I won't get into specifics, but, you know, I learned the very basic version of it from Kaylee and used it when I coached at Emerson. And every team was like, what is this? What are they doing? Right. Because back then, no one kind of knew it other than you guys. And right. I didn't take as much from you guys as I did from Tech. Your stuff is much more, I'll say, help oriented than whatever right. I was doing and the talent that I was working with at the time. It has to play into the type of defenseman that you're recruiting that is good at helping. That has to be one of the first things you guys look at, right?
Yeah. I mean, certainly physical size helps when we're doing it. You know, definitely lacrosse IQ is huge, where sticks are, you know, in our zone. You can have some aggressive guys on the field, but you don't need three of them on the close defense. You really need one of them. You know, like, we had the kid Rodriguez a few years ago, like, he was an absolute killer. So, like, it was like, but then we had the really cerebral guys, you know, off ball, that really understood, you know, Malinowski. And then we had, you know, Jake Cresta. Those guys are really smart guys. Knew how to, like, play off of him. If we had three guys that were really looking to press and extend and stuff, it just doesn't go. It could definitely open up some holes for us, right? So the Tech thing that I really appreciated, and you'll probably like this, it's when Jack started doing it, he got a transfer from Hofstra, right? And so I know Eastern Connecticut was playing, this is years ago, was playing when Rick was at Eastern, goes to, they played in some tournament out in Stony Brook. And so all of a sudden they're running this monster that playing the low backer and just at X. And then literally every time he went, he touched the ball, their X guy touched the ball. It was like a lock off almost. Like, they were going, like, it felt like a black ball. Everyone's locked off and he's going to take the ball away. And the anxiousness of him trying to do something, like, if you could, cause he couldn't get to the cage, the kid was just too big and strong. And then they would felt like they would send that double from the middle. And you didn't have a lot of options. So you got to the point, Rick, where it's like, look, literally, guys, we can't throw the ball behind. We can only keep it from wings to up top. That's all we're going to play this whole game, you know? And, like, that is what the part I like is, we get to dictate a lot to offenses on the game plan, right? You have to work your zone offense. How many zone offenses are you going to put in, right? If it's free flowing and they don't have a good understanding of it, that doesn't work well either, right? So there's got to be some structure that they have to put in and they have to work on. You know, I believe there's always got to be pressure, like I said, on the ball. I don't like people who have free feeds and free looks to the cage. So that's an important piece to me. And again, we're dictating where that shot may come. It may be from the wings. It may be from a big skip. You know, we can say 90% of the times in a skip pass for us in our zone, we're going to get a shot off the skip pass. We know that. Like, we know all the things that go with it because we've just seen it a lot. Now, the key is we haven't been doing this a lot in the last couple of years, right? So for us this year, it may take us a while to kind of get into it like we did back in the day. Like, it sometimes it takes a few games to really start to feel comfortable in it, and we need live reps against opponents to get into it, to see what their response is. So, and how our kids will respond to what they're doing, you know, that conversation and how they can communicate with that off a timeout. Like, what are we seeing? What are we feeling? Like, is our leverage right? Is, you know, are we doing the basic things right? Are we in our triangles as we, you know, as the ball is moving around, are we in good position schematically? So all those pieces will take time to develop. And that's why I said you have to be pretty dedicated to it. And most teams aren't, you know, and again, we try to make sure that's a core of what we try to do. Doesn't mean it's going to be all we do. You know, I think we have some athletic guys and man type defenders. And we ran a lot of man this fall. Because again, part of it too, is we want our offense to flow pretty nice too. Right. And when we know we're not going to see a ton of zone defenses. So if we're sitting in a zone all fall, it wouldn't really help our offense develop as well. So even for our end, where like we understand like how things go, it helped us that way as well.
Coach, I have one more question before we go. We got a couple of minutes left here, and I just wanted to thank you. You made my day by mentioning Springfield College because I went to Springfield College.
That's awesome.
So yeah, tall. Clark's not on the schedule this year. We'll talk about that off the call. That's so, fine.
Yeah.
For our student athletes in high school listening to this podcast, can you give them a little tidbit on the admissions process at Wesleyan and what the academic requirements are to be accepted at Wesleyan?
Yeah, I think it's very similar for a lot of the NESCAC schools. I think the biggest piece, because I get this question a lot with parents, like, hey, coach, my son has this GPA. Is that GPA going to get him in? You know, and really what I'll say a lot of times, it's like, hey, it's your rigor. It's your core classes, right? So some of the things that the NESCAC schools that are really important to a lot of admissions directors are the three hooks, basically. It's, you know, are you taking a calculus course? Because 90% of the kids that come to these schools are in calculus. Usually it's an AP calc, right? Are you taking like a fourth year of science with, you know, some kind of lab? And then maybe a fourth year of language as well, for, you know, not giving up after like 2 years of Spanish. You know, so those hooks usually are a good indicator, because usually if you're doing those things, you're also taking other AP courses, you know, taking school classes, to maybe taking a 3 to 5 APs is usually gives us an opportunity. Less than that, we're going to, you know, we'll have to find some deeper resources to try to make that happen. But, you know, you've got to really be a student with good rigor. Challenge yourself. Don't be shy when your senior class, your junior year and senior year come up. Like I said, if you've got opportunities to take some of those APs, you know, certainly do that. And try to get, you know, your grades should be in those A to B range. You know, we're trying to get more students with more A's than B's, not as many with C's, you know. So like if we don't, you know, we just, it's hard to get those guys accepted for us here. So there's definitely an academic component that goes with it. And I think most of the kids that are reaching out to us understand what that is. And, you know, we try to guide them through the process. Like the one thing I'll do is like, if there's a kid who's just off academically, we really like them. You know, we're very honest and saying, look, you know, this isn't going to be the right school. We love you as a player. And if I could do it, if I was the one, you know, saying you can get in, great, I would do it. But the reality is I don't want to take them down a path that it's just not going to work from an academic standpoint too. Right. So seeing their full picture after their junior year, and that's the other benefit of our system. And that's why it's driven that way. It's through admission, really, to be honest with you, like, because they have a much clearer picture of how they're going to look after the junior year. And then you're just picking your senior classes. I mean, there's an expectation, your senior classes, that you're going to hold up or do even better work, right? You know, you're actually, your trajectory should be going in an upward trend your senior year. You know, as we look at your first quarter grades, if you're going to go early decision, most of those kids are going early decision. So the academic piece, again, never can harp on that enough. It just gives you more opportunities, particularly in this league. And again, I think, you know, honest, you know, assessment of like, hey, could I have done more in terms of taking more challenging courses? You know, like, you know, you get to your junior year, again, if you've got the chance to take two or three, take them, you know, APs. Again, for me, I couldn't necessarily do that. That wasn't my thing. I'm just because I coach at Wesleyan doesn't mean I could have gone to school at Wesleyan. So it's, you know, but it's one of those things that, again, I appreciate what the admissions officers have to go through, because when you're dealing with, you think about Wesleyan as a whole, you know, 13,000 applications for 720 spots total. Right. So there's a lot of, there's just a lot of people that have to say no to. Right. And then you're dealing with all these coaches and stuff, and we're trying to get our athletic kind of spots all in place, you know, split that in half between male and female. And all of a sudden now it's telling you how difficult and challenging it is to get into these schools. You know, so just, again, give us as much ammo as possible and let us go to bat for you. And let us go to bat for you because you're taking challenging courses, right? Not because I have to go back and say, oh yeah, you know, he's got really good grades, but he didn't take anything. Right. That's the thing that uses. So that's why the GPA things to me sometimes is really challenging, because I don't really know what you're taking. If you're not taking anything that's challenging at all, it might be easy to get those types of grades, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Coach, unfortunately we are out of time. I could sit here and talk for at least another hour, probably two, especially with Jack here. And just want to wish you a great season, especially April 20th at home against Springfield in Middletown, Connecticut at Citroen Field.
Love it. My man, Keith Bugby, the greatest in New England lacrosse. I really believe that. And, I just want to, again, say thank you guys, because I appreciate what you do. And I really, it's great to see, you know, I subscribe to the New England Lacrosse Journal. I'm a proud member there, Kyle. So you should know that. Jack, I appreciate all this with the things you guys are doing for student athletes in New England is really special. And as coaches who have been around a long time, when we talk to gentlemen like yourself, you know, it's just a real privilege and honor. So thank you guys for doing what you do.
Well, Coach, thank you. And I just want to say you're not only a very good coach, but you're one of the great human beings in this game. So thank you for all you do for all the student athletes.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
And that was Coach Raba. What'd you think?
Very articulate, especially on the zone defense. Very interesting. How he, learned it from New York Tech. Actually, I was at those games when New York Tech played against Springfield for the national championship, and I remember them playing the zone, and Springfield was very challenged by it. But he's added a couple of tidbits that really challenged the offensive opponents.
That
the
he
team's
would,
offense, rather, yeah.
That he would not share with us.
No,
which
he
wouldn't. I love. Listen, I know that they're not going to tell me on record, but I will absolutely follow up and ask them specific questions. And yeah, that's how you can tell, like, the coaches that are really into it versus the coaches that are like, yeah, I don't really want to tell you. But he will tell me. That's why I like him.
What's very interesting, too, is his defense at times will dictate what the offense, what they want the offense to do and what the offense doesn't want to do.
Right. Which I love that about their zone. I think, you know, as we said on the pod, you just listen to, zones aren't bad. Bad zones are bad. Right?
You either get it or you don't. You need a high IQ lacrosse player. He likes big, strong defensemen. Explained their culture and what he's created. Obviously, he wants high compete, high academic kids, and they got to be a part of this very competitive culture in order to have any success at all.
At a great school, once again, in the NESCAC, one of the best conferences across all divisions of lacrosse. Just want to thank you again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.